Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, your announcer for this, or host for this session of Senior Focus. And today I'm presenting a chat session. It's a watershed week, not just in terms of the leadership of the government, who is the Prime Minister, but it's a watershed time with many issues on the table in a cliffhanging situation. Do we go this direction? Do we go that direction? How do we solve some of these issues about our future in New Zealand? And so today, my focus is going to be on what I've experienced in participating in a workshop that was facilitated by Belong Aotearoa yesterday. Belong Aotearoa is a specialist settlement support agency, and their job is to welcome and empower newcomers, that's refugees and migrants, who are coming into New Zealand and settling for the first time. And in this workshop, they chose to have a keynote speaker present at the start, Shamubiel Ekweb. And he is an economist employed by Simplicity, the not-for-profit KiwiSaver provider, and now housing for rent provider. And Shamubiel has produced a social cohesion report for the Helen Clark Foundation on two occasions now, in 2024 and now this year in 2026. And this is a report that really looks at how are we coming together or are we drifting apart? Most people I talk to reflect on the fact that we don't have the unity that they've experienced in the past, where we used to have, say, telethons, and everybody would come together glued to the television from one end of the country to the other as countless acts were performed, all to raise funds that were going to go to all sorts of communities up and down the country. This was a very unifying thing, this having telethons. They are from a past era. Yes, we come together over sports, and I think we've been watching with pride the medals coming in at the Commonwealth Games, and we look forward to Olympics and to rugby in South Africa. There are some occasions when we still come together, but there's an increasing disquiet. A sizable group of people feel isolated or disconnected or just frustrated that there's the middle New Zealand of politics that's kind of evaporated. The major parties are decreasing in their numbers and of supporters and numbers planning to vote for them, and this is no secret. It's just how it is. So in this context, I want to just reflect and tell you what Shamubiel presented to this workshop, where there were 70 or 80-odd people in the room. It was well attended from various other agencies of government that are involved with helping support resettlement, whether it's the Ministry of Education, MB, or Auckland University of Technology, AUT, or Auckland University itself, and some of the PhD students that are linked to these ethnic communities currently working on their studies that we're attending. In addition, of course, there were people who have long-standing connections with ethnic communities And like myself, I looked around the room and I could see people I knew from 8 to 10 years ago who were involved in this neck of the woods and still are. It's quite significant research that Shamobile has done, and he has used some of the questions that are used in Australia in order to tease out just how racist we are as a nation, so that no one can say, oh, well, you know, he's biased, he's asked the questions in, with a particular slant. He's used exactly the same questions that were used in Australia. And it turns out that we in New Zealand are more overtly racist in many ways, but and sometimes it's hidden and passive-aggressive type stuff. However, 84% of New Zealanders do feel that they belong here, and they still feel connected to New Zealand. But only 50% of those feel strongly connected to their communities or community that they live amongst. That's a telling response. And at the same time, trust is at an all-time low. So 2 out of every 5 New Zealanders trust their government to do a good job. So that's dropped from 57%. It's dropped to 45%, and there is signs that the trust is low in the media, and this is partly linked in to the low trust in government, because they get a lot of their information about government through the media. What was most telling of all was the result that 2 out of every 3 young people feel isolated. So I'll repeat that. 2 out of every 3 young people feel isolated. Now, this actually goes hand in hand with other surveys that show very high levels of anxiety in the population, particularly concentrated in the experience of young people 16 to 25. 1 in 4 Kiwis go without meals because they're budgeting very tightly. And it's this undercurrent of financial stress that came to the surface in many ways in this research, impacting on people feeling less hopeful about the future. So in 2024, 57% of people felt hopeful, and that's dropped to 45%. So we do have this group of people who feel more isolated, less positive about the future, and more alienated. And what the research showed was that about 30% of us feel connected. We feel that we belong, we feel we are comfortable and know who to go to for help, support, resources, etc. 41% of us are ambivalent. Yes, we kind of know there's support out there, but we are very unsure about how we would talk to people, or how we would seek help. We're not very sure that it would be beneficial or that anything good would come from it. So it's an overall negative slant in that group. And 28% feel alienated. And this is really very, very sad, because that means it's nearly 1 in 3. Oh, 1 in 3, you could say, Kiwis close to just don't feel connected. They don't feel they belong. They don't feel able to manage to sort out where to go for help, and so remain in that space. It's interesting that when you look overall, what predicts people's attitudes towards immigration, towards refugees and migrants coming into the country, actually, it's not people's ethnic background that influences their attitudes so much as their level of financial stress. Those under the greatest stress are the least positive about migrants coming in, fearing perhaps jobs will go to the migrants and they won't be able to compete, or feeling that more help is available for migrants, less for them. There's various levels of this sort of pressure, but it's coming from their own financial stress and their own unpredictability of their future finances. And that's really behind the lack of hope. And when you look at the overall results of this information and the analysis that Shamabil's done, you find that what is key and what is important to take from this survey is that friendships are supported by culture. Friendships can be fostered by a culture. So the kind of, and by culture, I don't mean culture with a capital C. I don't mean that we, I'm not talking about the arts and classical music or classical literature. I'm talking about the basic rules of inclusion and belonging in how we run our groups. Do we actually open our doors to all people? Do we encourage people who are refugees and migrants to our setting, to our particular meetings? Are we open about having friendships with people from different cultures? Do we bring them as guests to our homes? Do we encourage our children to have friendships right across cultures? So that friendship forms a glue that helps social cohesion, and it's really the key to having a society where people feel well connected. And makes logical sense. Then our sense of belonging that keeps us connected comes through things that nurture our belonging, nurture inclusion, and support people so they know they can confidently go somewhere without somebody's going to be aggressive and put them down or attack them or say nasty things. Now, young people can be seen as a resource. Firstly, in the openness and the opportunities that they have in their mobility, in their responsiveness to new situations and new learning, their capacity to uptake new developments and their freshness. And, I mean, youth are often portrayed as being fresh and receptive and innovative, and they can be an enormous resource in our community. They can lead things and lead things very well. And I'm thinking of leadership after the Christchurch earthquakes, the student army. I'm thinking of the Sustainable Coastlines movement, which was started by a young person. And the list can grow. Now, we also need a diverse media. Of course, I'm biased. Naturally, having spent 10 years building this program and now on the board of Planet FM, I am very much concerned with making sure that diverse media in the form of our radio station catering for more languages and more ethnic communities and more inter-faith and inter-ethnic community dialogue, because this is the heart of social cohesion. But diverse media doesn't exist without funding, without support from government, particularly not-for-profit diverse media. So there is a need to make sure that future government support is available and that this is understood why we need this. There's the matter of home ownership. And those of you who grew up in earlier times in New Zealand will remember that prior to the war, there were lots of people living in sheds and garages and without adequate housing. And it was during the war and immediately after the war that the government took leadership of housing and provided the opportunity for people to have a home, knowing that it was stable. It was that stability that would help build communities. It would help build a workforce that was strong in health and well-being, because health and well-being rests on having a safe, warm place to spend each night. And that's not rocket science, and it doesn't change no matter who's the government. It's a necessary birthright housing and has to be recognised as such. And some sort of support must be there. And it was there in the form of the family benefit that could be cashed in as a deposit. And this enabled people to get on the housing rung of the ladder. That doesn't exist anymore. We have really a system that people are only one or two steps away from sliding into homelessness if they're renting, and they may already be in that twilight emergency housing zone, some able to secure some kind of temporary support, albeit couch surfing or a substandard property like a garage or a place that doesn't have electricity or running water. But it's quite frightening to think that living in cars, living in sheds and garages and so on, people over the age of 60 are doing this. This is not just young people. This is not just people running away from home and having a lark. This, or people just saying, I want to be homeless and I enjoy this lifestyle. That's a very small minority of people who, for a variety of reasons, may be choosing homelessness. But most people who are homeless do not choose it, do not actively seek it, and do not actively want to remain homeless. But the biggest ingredient in predicting our future in New Zealand is this financial stress that is the primary driver behind whether we feel hopeful about the future or not, whether we are able to mobilise resources to change, whether we're able to reach out to seek support and help, or whether we further bury ourselves in being anxious, alienated, and ambivalent even towards whether we'll vote, whether we'll participate in society. So today's program is not just to bring you statistics from a report, which you may or may not ever read, and it's not just to tell you how we're deteriorating, although there is some deterioration, clearly. But it's to tell you that I experienced a feeling of hope that came from attending this workshop, because in the room were many people younger than me, were many people working to provide support not only for refugees and migrants, but to bring about greater social cohesion. And I felt privileged to participate in this workshop and privileged to be amongst all these people who are working for improving our future, for improving outcomes for refugees and migrants and for our whole communities as a whole. I felt very privileged to still be living in New Zealand, even though it's not the New Zealand that I thought I'd be living in my old age, and there's a lot of things happening that I'm not happy about. But overall, I could not wipe the smile off my face. It was just an impossible situation to think that I would not be able to be thinking along the lines of these people in 10 years' time, be in a workshop in 10 years' time that was celebrating some of the fruits of the seeds of what was sown yesterday. That's the degree of confidence I had and will continue to have. So as I think about the Watershed Week and I think about the Leadership Challenge, by the time you hear the program, you will know the outcome. You will know how we are more fragmented, possibly, as a nation, how divided we are, and how many people are unsure which way we should be heading, how many people are unsure how they're going to vote, and how many people are disappointed that we don't have perhaps the type of leader that we want. And so all of this will be part of your thinking as you reflect on this week. It becomes very important to consider what are some of the solutions that are being discussed in the media, what are some of the thoughts of the leaders and some of the responses that are out there. And there are some positive things. National, for example, has put KiwiSaver on the agenda as something that they want to support KiwiSaver from birth. So children, when they leave school, will have a sizable deposit built up in their KiwiSaver just through compound interest. Then New Zealand First is talking about cash payments for births, thinking that they can push the birth rate up. But I do caution here, because all the experience of countries around the world that have tried this, whether it's Japan and Korea, Hungary, even Australia, there were small blips, small improvements. But overall, there are many factors impinging on the birth rate. Only a few are economic. A lot have to do with culture. A lot have to do with why people are not in the mood for having children. And when you think about it, if you're facing scary times with climate change, if you're facing more disasters, and you're facing less certainty in a lot of areas, including economic, then you might not feel that a sum of $5,000 in 1 year is actually going to cut the mustard when you think of the high cost of actually having a child and supporting it through to 18. It's a different kettle of fish. And of course, many people are supporting their children as adults now. So I will leave that as one of those solutions that's hanging, but its impact is likely to be shallow. On my list here, the third item is the 8 new emergency helicopters, which will be very much a feature of rural New Zealand and helping people in times of disaster, and this is a very important piece of infrastructure. Then $30 million of the for the hydrogen plant in the South Island. This is a growth orientated contribution from the infrastructure fund. Then there's the government's desire to grow the organic centre to future-proof organic agriculture and provide better resourcing for those people trying to produce organic goods, organic produce. Then there's $1 million set aside for wilding pines, and I know that those who've been very concerned about wilding pines in the rural sector up and down New Zealand have been lobbying government very hard, and this is a small drop in the bucket, but it's some way towards recognising their voice. There's a website update to help get Kiwis into work, and there's support for the air links to the Chatham Islands, helping those who export goods from their produce and helping people in their general comings and goings and visits to the island, strengthening community. Well, this is very desirable, and it's obviously being highlighted in this lead up to the election. The money set aside for the Northwest Busway suddenly was announced, and stage one funding has been in the pipeline for some time, but it's confirmed and signed and sealed in a way that gives confidence. And it's been possible to announce that more children are enrolled in school, and children's attendance at school has improved. And this has been a focus for the ACT Party, and they're very delighted to see some results from their drive to get this change happening. We do need to concentrate on having faith in the future. And some things our government leaders are not necessarily basing on evidence. And for example, with the birth rate, I mean, we have a situation where the male sperm count has fallen more than 60% since 1973 to 2018. There's been that 60% fall. And the childbearing environment, where if you have few people in your circle of friends, if you delay marriage, if you find alternative relationships, if you don't concentrate on long-term relationships, if you have less sexual liaisons happening, a lot of young people are reporting they are not having any sexual partners in a whole year. And so this change in the social scene is having a huge impact on marriage being seen as less desirable, less common, less attractive, and if there are fewer people marrying and fewer people having children, then there are fewer people around you doing this, and you are less likely to do it. And there's the aspect of the public narrative. If people are talking about the cost being negative, or the exhaustion, or career interruption. Yes, it's all wonderful to think about the joy of grandchildren, but for many people, it's quite scary. So I'm just going to suggest that as we come to an end on this program, that it's important to support young people, it's important to listen to young people, it's important to have dialogue with young people and to bring intergenerational activities to the fore and prioritise them. Thanks for listening. Hit Together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.